हरिः ॐ सह न भवतु सह नो भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रीहद्वैतगदाधर श्रीवात्सरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, so continuing Bhakti Sandarbha, so Adhyaya 1, Bhakti established as the Abhideya, Anuchedas 1 through 120. Oh, the thing's over here, why did they put it on that side? Yes. Overview of Adhyaya, so the page before, page 5. Adhyaya 1, Bhakti establishes the highest Abhideya, 1 through 20. So we have description of the Bhakti process. Worship of Devatas is condemned. Bhakti alone is the conclusion of all scriptures. Bhakti is superior to all other sadhanas. Bhakti establishes the topmost process. Right? If you have this, you appreciate this, there's no doubts, then one can, then that's the establishment of firm faith. Right? It means if you have this understanding, you can work on this understanding, that is itself firm faith. Right? So this is the principle that's working there. Because the scriptures, everything in the scripture, it's about bhakti. There's not something else. You know, any scripture that's there, you can explain bhakti. Just like we gave example before of that one Ayurvedic doctor, you know, old traditional family doctor, that there was some discussion about the connection between them, and he said, yes, of course. And then he took one verse from the Ayurveda and described it from 10 different shastras. You know, from the angle of the philosophy, from the angle of Ayurveda, from the angle of astronomy, from the angle of logic, from the angle of, you know, all these different things. He showed that the same thing says all those things. It's just a matter of you understand the connections. You know, like Narad Muni, he's known as Anuchana because he understands the connection between all the scriptures. And that means then you have to be able to understand the philosophy. Otherwise, if you don't see it back to the philosophy, you can't make that. You might make one or two, like you see, it's very common that people combine Ayurveda and astronomy or astrology. You know, because then they can tell your chart, see the planets, see the, you know, the things here, so they can say what's going on. But beyond that, not very many do. Philosophy and logic, they go together. You know.
They have psychology also nowadays in Tibet.
Yeah, but that's generally, I think the Kerala Wallas do that, know it more. At least traditionally, they knew it more. Yes?
As we were discussing once, the Charaka actually adds Nyaya.
That's right. Ayurveda. Okay, so maybe that's the name. Yeah, yes, so that's then where you're coming from. No, because in Charaka, because it's about health.
Right.
So it's not just about physical health, which is generally taken. It's also about mental and intellectual health. Mm. And so there's a whole very detailed description on logic there, and how it works, how the mind works and everything. So that must be that I've only come across Ayurvedic doctors from Kerala that used it. Mm. Other places they didn't, but it's there. Just like, let's say, in South India, they tend towards fresh ingredients to make their medicines, while North they exclusively use dry ingredients. They don't like to use fresh. So it's just where they emphasize, you know. Or let's say, like the Ayurvedic doctor that I don't know what his name. He's called Jihwako. Like that? You ever heard of the some movie or theme? Dr. Zhivago?
Dr. Zhivago.
Yeah. But his name, I mean, in Thailand, he's called Jihwako. So he was an Ayurvedic, you know, Brahmin from India, Ayurvedic doctor who then was probably one of the associates of Buddha, and he came to preach over in Thailand. So he established the whole medical system there that they use, and the massage. And so in that old temple, Wat Po, it's one of the main ones in Thailand. So it's on the wall, it's carved into the wall. So it goes back 2,500 years. And so they use the exact same thing. So he's an Ayurvedic doctor, he established it, but somehow or another in India, it's been lost. The only ones that do any massage is in Kerala. In the north, they don't do massage. They also, that's another thing, they just don't do it. In Panchakarma, these things aren't popular. That's down there. So it's just different aspects remained in different places. So that massage that they do, they call Thai massage, that's actually Ayurvedic massage. It's just that it's been so separated that people don't know its origin. How do we get into that? So they're going to have that. So the psychology is very much part of it. But I think some of them are doing it by coming in from modern psychology. Yeah. They're not coming in from Charaka. It comes in from the New Age. It doesn't come in from tradition. So here is that. You have the bhakti, David's bhakti alone is conclusion. Bhakti is superior to all other sadhanas. Means if you're doing bhakti, all other sadhanas are concluded. And it's the topmost process. Any other process, religious process, is included in bhakti, like we were discussing yesterday. When you have the reflection, everything in the reflection is there in the original. But the original has more. Right? Okay. Adhyaya 2, analysis on different characteristics of bhakti, 121 through 178. Bhakti is all auspicious, removes all sins and their reactions. Bhakti is transcendental to the material world. Results of bhakti. Offenses while performing bhakti. Ananya or akinchana bhakti explained. Qualification for akinchana bhakti. Right, so he taught you from how it's auspicious removes and brings it all the way up to, you know, pure and alert devotional service. Cause of manifestation of bhakti, 179 through 201. Association of great devotees is the cause of bhakti. Cause of association of devotees is their own independent nature. I guess we put the cause. Maybe. Three types of great devotees. Three categories of general devotees. That's interesting. Devotees ranked according to various sadhanas. That's going to be a problem. Especially when we find out that one whose sadhana is taking a shot is the highest. It's like Madhu Mangal, right? Adhyayana 4, the various sadhana processes elaborated, 202 to 234. Karma process defined, importance of accepting guru highlighted for both jnana and bhakti sadhana processes, jnana sadhana elaborated, bhakti sadhana elaborated. Adhyayana 5, types of pure bhakti, 235 to 340. Vaidhi bhakti and its aspects, raga nuga bhakti. So you can see it's a very nice in depth point, but all these points. You see, is that we're used to hearing them. But it's just here we'll get into that very, you know, the fine details and analytical. So that's. Okay. So, Adhyaya 1, Bhakti establishes Abhideya, Adhyaya, Kashika. This Adhyaya focuses on establishing Bhakti as the highest process to attain the absolute truth, Abhideya. But you want to put Abhideya as absolute truth or Abhideya as the highest process?
Highest process to recommend.
I would have a tendency because it would be thought that Abhideya means the absolute truth. Just put it right after process. First, the author states that out of all the types of rituals, worship of the Supreme Lord is the topmost and is the purpose of all Vedic knowledge. Bhakti Yoga is proven as superior to karma and jnana. By showing how karma and jnana ultimately aim for bhakti, and bhakti offers transcendental results which aren't offered in other processes. Also, it is emphasized that one should perform exclusive worship of the Supreme Lord, rejecting worship of the demigods. But since karma is directed towards the Lord, actually, that's its purpose. You don't need the demigods as an intermediary. Because bhakti is the one that gives the results. So if bhakti gives the results of karma, why do we need the demigods? We're going to the demigods because they'll give the result. But no, bhakti, because Krishna gives the result. And that's through bhakti. So you don't require the demigods at all. It's, in other words, how you say, you know how devotee, we were discussing before about how one has to be very careful to one doesn't get distracted by these kind of these, yeah, aparavidyas. You know, like devotees get off into the New Age or get off into the Ayurveda or the astronomy or something else, they get distracted, you know, from the pure devotional service. So then we see is that you know, is that comes up a lot. I mean, it's natural, but it comes up a lot because of the contemporary kind of New Agey aspect. But we see is that in the Vedic, you have the similar thing. It's that there's an idea that there's something else, I could get something better quicker. Like we see, so we say, okay, we're giving this, but you know, I have the ISKCON Diksha Guru, but my Siksha Guru is, you know, from somewhere else, you know, all that kind of stuff. So there's this idea that the demigods are going to give you some benefit, and it's something that's not, you know, things. So they're getting distracted because it's actually about bhakti. Does that make sense? So it's the same kind of thing. But next, devotional service to Vasudeva is described as the conclusion of all scriptures. Here, the author systematically presents how each canto of Srimad Bhagavatam propounds the superiority and transcendental nature of bhakti. Right? So it's not just developing up, it's already starting with that and then bringing out different angles and taking it farther and farther. So it's not like it's starting at one place and then building up. It's starting off with pure devotion and continuing that all the way through. All of the scriptures also conform with this statement that bhakti is the highest process. In order to substantiate this point, a comparative analysis is done of the various yoga processes. Through this comparison, bhakti is unanimously established as the superior process. Unanimous means the other yoga processes themselves say bhakti is superior. So we may analyze, okay, we have all these yoga processes, and so this one says this, that one says that. But no, but they all say bhakti is the highest. Even though they may use some different mechanics for it, you know, one's on the mind and body, one's on the intelligence, something like this. So, through this comparison, bhakti is unanimously established as the superior process and is the only independent process, whereas karma and jnana dependent on bhakti for the results. Right? The statements of the great sages from Srimad Bhagavatam and other scriptures are cited in this regard. Finally, bhakti is proven as the Abhideya by analyzing Bhagavatam using the six types of proof, Tatparyalingas, and elaborating on the Chatushloki, the seed of Bhagavatam. Thus, all the wise persons and elevated devotees engage in exclusive worship of the Supreme Lord through the process of devotional service. So, overview of Adhikaranas. Adhikarana 1, Anuchedas 1 through 17. Description of the Bhakti Yoga process. Anucheda 2, worship of devas is condemned. Adhikarana 3, bhakti alone is the conclusion of all the scriptures. Adhikarana 4, bhakti is superior to all of the sadhanas. Adhikarana 5, bhakti establishes the topmost process. So now, okay, this is Adhyaya 1, so Adhikarana 1. Why does it say 3?
That's a mistake.
Oh, okay, I was going to say, did I miss something? So, yes, there's only this much on 1 and 2, and this is...
Actually, headers, then you need to stop linking in the word, and then it changes the next header. Then, when I was printing this, I think I forgot.
Oh, okay.
So then the third adhikarana may change it.
Oh, okay, when you move on. Okay. Adhikarana 1. Description of the Bhakti Yoga process, Anuchedas 1 through 17, Adhikarana Prakashika. The current Adhikarana describes the Swarupa of Bhakti. Srila Jiva Goswami states that by performing devotional service to the Lord, the Jiva becomes free from ignorance, which is the root cause of all the sufferings, and attain attains the highest perfection of life. And so, that's, yeah. The cause of the jiva's ignorance is his aversion towards the Supreme Lord. The scriptures teach that one can get rid of this ignorance only by obtaining a favorable distribution towards the Lord. So an intelligent person, being enlightened by the mercy of a qualified guru, should fully worship the Lord through the process of pure bhakti, devoid of other desires, devoid of karma jnana. When a devotee worships the Lord in this way, the Supreme Lord manifests himself in the heart of the devotee. The devotee becomes filled with bliss on perceiving the Lord's form. By this worship, ignorance, the cause of repeated births, is destroyed. Because the ignorance is not seeing our relationship with the Lord. So as soon as we surrender the Lord, then that giving up, that will then remove everything. Having explained that the scriptures describe worship of the Lord as the process for attaining the ultimate happiness, the author next clarifies how all other processes ultimately conclude in bhakti. Shankhya, Asanga, Yoga, and Karma are classified as being favorable because they produce realization of the form of Brahman and are thus suitable for gradual development of realization of the Lord. Right, so you're going to get that gradual. You appreciate the aspect of Brahman, because from there when we say Krishna is everything, because it's not about the Brahman realization, it's about seeing that everything's connected to Krishna, the person. That's the important thing. So the study of the Virat Roop, the study of the aspects of Brahman and all these analytical aspects of the material world, the 24 elements, is simply to see it's all coming from Krishna, it's all controlled by Krishna. So its favorableness is that it gives you the opportunity to see how to connect everything to Krishna. But that actually will only come, Bhagavatam will explain that. But these are tools that one can use. Does that make sense? So we see is that if one sees like that, then there's the aspect where you're not going to be so distracted by the material world, because you don't see the material world. Remember before, I think it was the 11th canto that Srila Prabhupada was explaining. Was it 11th canto or was it early? No, 10th canto. 10th canto. Because he was explaining that the pure devotee actually doesn't see the material world. He only sees Krishna. So that means he sees how everything is connected to Krishna. And that means that everything connected to Krishna means it has a nature in which it's supposed to be used in Krishna's service. And so then the devotee naturally tries to apply that nature as it in Krishna's service. Does that make sense? You know, because otherwise, if we don't see this way, you can say, oh, that's technical, we're only interested in Krishna and Hare Krishna. And that's great if that's the way you see. But then why you still wouldn't see everything as Krishna? The gopis are seeing the trees and this and that and all, everything connected to Krishna. You see the Jamuna as Krishna, you see the trees as Krishna, the forest as Krishna. You know, so like that. So then maybe directly going more into the Swarasati pastimes with that. But the point is that's what's going on. But for us is then if you don't at least mechanically start to see that way or appreciate it at least, then what can happen is we see the material world as separate from Krishna. And because of that, then, you know, there has to be some laws governing it. So Krishna, then devotional service is what you connect to Krishna. But then there's the material world. Then that has to have some laws. And because we're not seeing connected to Krishna, we don't connect it to his laws. You know, other than a few things, don't steal, you know, don't take your neighbor's donkey. You know, these important, you know, 10 items that are mentioned. You know, so then what happens is, other than that, but what governs everything else? What governs how I deal mechanically with something? So then who has to make up those laws? We do. So in other words, since they can't extend the manavoy aspect, you know, down, at least the dharma within their duties, and they don't understand also then how the jnanamoy, how we're not the body, the soul, the mechanics of that extend down to everything. Then they make up their own religious process like that. And so therefore you see even the modern religions, world religions, that there's God, he created the world, and then he left it to the people, and they make up the laws. He doesn't control it anymore. Because otherwise, if he controls it, why is it going so badly? Rather than you're making a mess of it. You know, does that make sense? Yeah. So that same principle, that same illusion, then can easily come up. So that's the importance of this Shankhya, Astanga, and Karma, is that they show how everything is connected to Krishna. And since it's connected to Krishna, it already has its nature given by Krishna. And it's the laws governing the mechanics of engaging that, you know, to create the transformations that we're looking for, or results. So if you see like that, one, it's only for Krishna, therefore I use these mechanical laws just for getting results for pleasing Krishna. But otherwise, if you know the laws are like this, they're not like that. Does that make sense? So that's why it's important. For the eternal associates, already everything's connected to Krishna. So within their realm, whatever is seen, that's seen in context of Krishna. Like that. But here is that we're given that the tools by which, wherever we're situated by our conditioning, we can see the connection to Krishna. Karma is also is a cause of bhakti because it is a form of following the Lord's order and involves offering to the Lord. Right? So, means not that the karma itself is causing bhakti, but by following karma yoga, then it will create pure bhakti. So in other words, when karma is used in the service of the Lord, then it will bring you gradually to the point of pure bhakti. Does that make sense? So this is not... Yeah. Because, it's following the Lord's order. Jnana is an attendant to bhakti by causing a detachment to material objects. So we see karma has more of a positive aspect. Jnana's point is to keep you from getting entangled. You know, and from, because you like to analyze, you can analyze all these different things about how everything is connected. So, through karma, though karma and jnana are favorable, it's recommended that one should worship by direct bhakti, consisting of hearing and chanting about the Lord. Sabai pumsam puro dharmo yato bhaktir adhok chaje. Ahaitu kyapatihata yayatma suprasidati. The supreme dharma for all human beings is that by which prema bhakti to the Lord arises, which is not caused by anything other than itself, cannot be obstructed, and which satisfies the mind completely. So that's the thing. It has no other cause but itself, and it can't be obstructed. So that's the whole thing, is to see is, okay, one's going in one's service, there's so many obstructions, right, in one's life and in the situations. But that which can't be obstructed, that's actually the direct aspect of bhakti. That makes sense, because that you can always do. The situation changes, like you're going out for some very important service. You're going out to the shop to pick up ingredients for advanced devotional service. And so when you go to the shop, either the shop's closed, they don't have it, there's a million people in there, you don't have the time, so you have to go to another shop. Right? But the principle of you trying to be engaged in Krishna's service and doing things for Krishna, that remains. Even if you go out and you don't find something. So then you decide, okay, then let's go, let's make a new idea. Right? So, the Sarup qualities of bhakti are described in the above verse. It is causeless, ahaituki, devoid of other goals or motives, since it is by nature the very form of happiness sought by other methods. It is impossible to obstruct this bhakti, since no other object exists which gives higher bliss. When a taste for bhakti develops, that bhakti, bhakti yoga, characterized by hearing and chanting, begins. Right? So that aspect where hearing and chanting becomes the prominent. Because for us, we're doing our service, and we're also, as sadhana, we're chanting our rounds. You know what I'm saying? But what we're saying is, when you get the taste, then that actually is the main service, is hearing and chanting. And other things are just aspects that you do, in support of that hearing and chanting. Does that make sense? So it's externally it won't change, but internally it changes the focus. Because I've seen, I don't know about recently, but I remember seeing before, so you know, during, you know, you sit in the temple and chanting, and someone's finishing. Okay, yeah, okay, done. And that's it. They put their bees, they're done for the day. Now I can do some service. You know, it's like, got that out of the way. Okay, now let's get to it. So, but that's good because it's all connected to Krishna. But at some point, it's the hearing and chanting that's actually the service. And these other things then are for helping others. It's part of the preaching. You know, you're doing the temple services, anything that's going on. It's also that you have the facilities that all these guests can come, or people can take part in programs, or devotees can come and get benefit from coming to the temple program. And so it's all about hearing. Like Prabhupada said, chanting, dancing, taking a shot. That's what we do. The other things are details to support that can go on. So,
it's an interesting episode that one devotee, in his memory, mentions that he was in the 70s, he was a temple commander in here. And of course, always during the festival, there were shortage of people, those who can do some practical service. And one devotee came from the West, and he was quite qualified in different things. And then he immediately caught him and said, okay, you have to do this, this, this. And he said, no. He said, I'm going every day, 12 hours, into the woods, into the banana fields, and just changing my japa there. This is why I came to Mayapur. I'm not going to do any practical service. And of course, the temple commander was thinking, this is like big Maya. And then he tolerated for a few days, tried to convince him, but that one wasn't convinced. So he was like disappearing after Mangalarati and coming at night. So he went to complain to Srila Prabhupada. And then he explained the whole situation, and Srila Prabhupada was really carefully, you know, listening to the whole, you know, story, and then looked at him right, you know, into the eye, and said, don't you think chanting Hare Krishna is devotional service? And then he was like, okay.
Oh, that's what happened.
So, also, you know, Rupa Goswami mentions, you know, that the smarta vyosatatam vishnur, then the remembrance is the you know, constant remembrance, basically.
Yes.
That's the main thing. And also, Shikshastaka mentions kirtaniya sadahari. So this is the goal, but to achieve that goal, we should practice it. Otherwise, how is it going to happen?
It's just.
Some think it's just, you know, somehow or other. But it's a mental endeavor.
Yes.
So physical, it's, you know, we can manage it. But mental, always changing, you know, always trying to remember Krishna. This is, you know, for many, it's quite challenging, I would say.
Yes. That's there, because before it was mentioned about how Krishna reveals himself in the heart once you get that absorption, and then it just develops. It's interesting, when Prabhupada first came to America, you know, 64 rounds, and they go out on Harinam. So all they did is just chant Hare Krishna, you know, chant and take prasad, chant and take prasad. That's it, you know, very nice, and that then devotees couldn't. So it's 32, okay, at least 16. Then, you know, as it reduces, then there's more Harinam. Like that. And then the time when he saw they couldn't maintain on that platform, then he started introducing, you know, the more of the Pancharatrik, you know, so the 1980 established temple program that we have. And, you know, so it comes into that form of Pancharatra rather than just Bhagavad. And then, with time, then I think it goes more into the 70s. That was 1970. So then he said we need to establish one ashram, because many were just not fully absorbed. Those who could would, you know, that was enough, and that was there. So then, if this devotee could just sit down 12 hours a day and chant, then great. You know, if you can't, then we have the pancharatric system we have there, and then not done, you extend out, and then you know, engage the nature, the conditioned nature more. And that's very far. Having stated the Srup Lakshana of Bhakti, next the Tatastha Lakshana of Bhakti is elucidated. By the performance of bhakti, detachment from material goals and knowledge of the Lord automatically develops in one's heart without separate endeavor by the grace of the Supreme Lord. On the other hand, one who tries to cultivate only detachment and knowledge without developing taste for bhakti will not attain ultimate success because the results are temporary in nature. Right, so but I think also this is Madhurya Kadambini explains this whole thing. It's focusing on that. So then, So that's the thing, is the detachment and knowledge is supportive of bhakti, but you have to be trying to attain bhakti. Which means that you're doing it in to attain bhakti, it's also counted as bhakti. But then there's that aspect of that pure devotional service where one's just absorbed in Krishna. Right? So that's why when he says the detachment, as long as it's bringing you closer to Krishna, it's a value. Does that make sense? You know, so that's before the Ekadasi, you know, the 48-hour vrata, and that would bring people closer to Krishna. It's very good. But if by doing that, it was only, you know, just I have no energy, can't do anything, this and that, and, you know, getting distracted, then why do that? You do how much brings you closer to Krishna. Therefore, the minimum is no grains, no beans. It doesn't say how many times a day you eat, when you eat, how much you eat, how you eat it. None of that. Yes?
The difficulty seems to be with that definition is that to ascertain, you know, how a person is advanced on level of bhakti is really difficult. But to see knowledge and renunciation, it's quite obvious.
Yes,
it's right there.
Well,
you can see he is renounced. And if you talk to anybody, then you can understand how knowledgeable the person is.
Mm-hmm.
So for many, this becomes the main thing. And people think, okay, he's renounced, he's knowledgeable, means he's advanced. But it's not necessarily, because here it mentions it's only secondary aspects of bhakti.
Yes. But it's still, as long as you see that they're stable in their service, it's regular, all that, you see that, you know, they're absorbed nicely in service, then from that you can tell that it's all nice. But if you see someone's just renounced and that, and won't do anything else, you know, it's like, he won't serve Prasad because he's fasting, you know, he won't do this because, you know, you know, that kind of thing. That there, you'll find that there'll be a little bit of trouble. But if you see it's there, and for others who might be inspired to do that, then that's nice because they're seeing it as, this is how I advance in devotional service. So the Tatastha Lakshana doesn't mean that it's not used. It's just like the 26 qualities of a devotee. 25 are Tatastha, and one is Swarup. So Swarup simply means which is always there, and the other ones may see there's more renunciation and knowledge, or I might see less, just like with Kashi Mishra. Then he didn't have was not manifesting the knowledge to be able to defeat the Mayavadis. Mm-hmm. Therefore he requested Lord Chaitanya to do that. But we know he's an eternal associate, so, you know, it's just... So he wasn't manifesting, you know, that knowledge and things like that. So the Tatastha means you may see that, you may not. It's helpful. It's supportive, right? Because before performing, it may, you will become detached, but it's not necessarily it'll take up the form of the religion of detachment or the religion of knowledge. It'll just be he's attached to anything that's not connected to Krishna, and he's always absorbed in whatever he understands about Krishna. So he may not look like a scholar or a great renunciate, but he doesn't do anything that's not connected to Krishna. You know, so then you have, you know, like an example, like, what's his name? The Samadhi is up at the Jagannath Mandir?
Jaina.
Like that. Always engaged, but not doing anything other than needed to be done. The Krishna is always just, you know, always absorbed, always very busy. Like that. So you wouldn't say he's a great scholar, you wouldn't say he's a great renunciate. But he was a great scholar, a great renunciate, because knowledge means it's only about Krishna, only thought about Krishna. And renunciation, you don't do anything material. He was never doing anything material. So it may take that, it may take, it has, it's there, it automatically comes. So you might see the religious manifestation of it, or you might not. You know, just like you said, it's hard to see the advancement, but if you understand what's going on, then you can see that he is advanced, because he's not, actual renunciation is not being connected with anything with the material world. And so he wasn't. Does that make sense? You know, so like that, you know, you have. Okay. Okay. On the other hand, one who tries to cultivate only detachment and knowledge without developing taste for bhakti will not attain ultimate success, because those results are temporary in nature. Thus, bhakti is independent, whereas jnana and vairagya are dependent. Right? Jnana and vairagya are dependent on bhakti, because without it, then they don't work. You know, developing a taste means everybody's trying. But it's just how much focus is there. So in the beginning, when there's not much taste, then these secondary aspects will become more prominent. But since one's trying to develop that taste, naturally with time, bhakti will give all these things, and one will move forward until that taste is there. Then you'll see it dynamically move forward. Then it is emphasized that sense gratification is not the goal of one's activities. Rather, the goal of karma is to inquire about the Supreme Absolute Truth. Right. Yeah, because otherwise we see is that I perform an action, that action gives a result, and then I, because I've done the action, the result is mine, I enjoy that result. But actually it's just how to take your actions and then there the resultant results to offer to Krishna. That's the actual purpose of karma. Just like jnana, its actual purpose is to know about Krishna. That's its purpose. By studying the scriptures, you should know Krishna. By performing activities, then you have opportunities to offer things to Krishna. That's their actual purpose. That's what's how it's used in the spiritual world. When it comes to the material world, you take out Krishna, then you just have the mechanics of karma and jnana, so they're called separately karma and jnana. But otherwise, it just means activities in Krishna consciousness and knowledge about Krishna. So, and the interesting thing is when you say chit shakti, because sometimes, you know, we take it, you know, it's one or the other. It's the action, but it's also chit means it's where the knowledge is. It's the knowledge potency. So that means action in Krishna consciousness, like the fifth chapter of Gita. That's then the point. So the two are not separated. We tend to separate because of, you know, we can't use them together. You know, so much we either karmis or jnanis, yes.
Also, I think this one is told in Lakshmi Tantra that that action can be only performed when there is the relationship is established. So in the chit shakti, that's where the relationships are also established.
Well, you operated at that.
Yes.
Means you understand. Yes.
Establishment, operating.
Yeah.
So that real knowledge is. Then you know the context of where it's applied. Then the action also.
Okay. Yeah. So in bhakti, they're not independent. They're dependent. They're part of the bhakti. Right. We tend to separate them and think that bhakti's, you know, one thing, karma's one thing, jnana's one thing. No, bhakti is the overall thing. Karma and jnana are dependent on bhakti. So yeah. Okay, then, having stated that the goal is to inquire about the absolute truth. The next Anucheta describes the nature of the absolute truth and the process of realizing it. The process is illustrated by Brahma at the beginning of the creation as follows. The great personality Brahma, with great attention and concentration of the mind, studied the Vedas three times, and after scrutinizingly examining them, he ascertained that attraction for the supreme personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, is the highest perfection of religion. Right? So he studied the Veda itself. That would just be the Veda. You know, we were talking before. So he studies that, then he comes up with all this. Because then we'll see as then later will manifest the Smriti, where it'll be discussions like you see Brahma with Narad, or Narad with Shiva, you know, or you know, Shiva and the four Kumaras, or you know, different great personalities. Then those conversations are documented by Vyasadeva. That's the Smriti Shastra. So there simply from analyzing the Veda, how you would apply it in your life for success. That is the Smriti. Right? And so we see, starting from Brahma, where the source of it all comes from. Means source of it, mean of who's analyzed and therefore appreciated it. Then it's going to be, it's about bhakti, obtaining pure love for the Lord. That means, if the Veda is only its only person, that means all the other branches, the Upa Vedas and the Upangas, they're all for the purpose of knowing the Lord. There is no other purpose. Next, the author elaborates on the different stages of the bhakti process. The beginning of bhakti yoga is hearing about Krishna. The first stage in the development of a taste for hearing about Krishna is some preliminary appreciation. The second stage is association with devotees. The third is engagement in devotional service. The fourth stage, achieved if one is actually executing the rules and regulations of devotional service under the guidance of a bona fide spiritual master, is freedom from unwanted desires and habits. Then comes nishtha, firm faith in the process of Krishna consciousness. And the sixth stage is ruchi, a taste for hearing and chanting about Krishna, serving him, and so on. Finally, one who comes to the spiritual platform attains pure devotional service to Krishna. Mad bhaktim lavate param. Bhagavad Gita 18:54. In other words, one becomes completely fit to serve Krishna, and Krishna accepts your service at that time. Hence, by performing bhakti yoga, in which one is detached from all desires, mukta sangasya, one develops realization, vijnanam, of the Lord internally or externally, without having to meditate. The performance of bhakti does not give suffering, either during sadhana or perfection, as in the case of performing karmas. Rather, it gives happiness in sadhana and perfection. Right? So in both. Thus, the wise perform bhakti at all times, during sadhana and in perfection. Okay.
We always say that sadhana and bhakti is the same, sadhana and sadhya. I mean, will be
yes,
the
yes.
same. But it means that other processes, their sadhana and their both are different
yes.
as such?
Yeah. Yes, well, it's just like, let's say, look at that karma. Your sadhana is then, you know, your pious lifestyle and then yajnas and everything like that. But your goal is to go to the heavenly planets to enjoy.
So there's no sadhana and no yajna there as such?
I mean, no, the sadhana is the yajna, this, that, and all those things. But once you get the goal, you're not doing that sadhana anymore. Are they being, on the heavenly planets, are they being austere? You know, means everyone goes to Nandankana to perform austerities. like that. Or jnanis, they do all these different things and renounce and all this, and then they meditate on Parma or Brahman or whatever they're meditating on. But once they get to the point for liberation, then they stop all that.
And do what?
Just absorb themselves in Brahman. Oh, they just merge with the Lord. So once they merge, they're not doing anything anymore. Like we see is when Gopu Kumar saw those persons in Kala
Mahakala.
Say Kala Krishna from Mahakala Pura. Then they're all just sitting there, you know, and they're, you know, whatever it is, probably in some variety of asana, just, you know, they're everything's white, they're white, everything else is like that, and so then they're absorbed like that. And so they're doing nothing. So that's the point. At some point, because being chit, the jiva, having that feature, at some point he needs to do something. He did something to get himself there. Now he's getting the result of that, enjoying that result. So in other words, he's enjoying the result. So that's why it's material, because karma, it's more gross, and this is more subtle. But both, you perform the abhideya, to get a result. When you get the result, you enjoy the result. That's why the point, no results are for Krishna. So if you start there, just with that much, even though all the other mechanics you don't know, just by, doing whatever you're doing, but the result's given to Krishna, then it becomes bhakti. So there's a difference there. Right, and their identity might seemingly externally change. Oh yes, I'm pious. I'm this and that. When they get the heavenly plans, I'm the enjoyer. I'm detached. I'm renounced. And I'm God. I'm the one. So, but here is that I'm serving a Krishna. Then you're advancing. I'm serving a Krishna. You take up that. You're beginning the stage of bhakti, just getting that faith. You're serving the Krishna, it's about bhakti and pleasing Krishna. When you get to the platform of prema, it's still about your servant and of Krishna, and it's all about pleasing Krishna. So it remains all the way through. It doesn't change. It just gets more and more deep. I'm not sure if it's been used, but it'd be like taking sugar cane. Sugar cane itself has a bit of a sweet taste. Like that, but then as you squeeze it, then the juice has more taste. And then if you cook that, then there's more. Then they make it to the gore, then the sugar, then the rock candy. So each time the taste gets more fine. So that way bhakti is the process, it is the result. Panchanga Nyaya of the Adhikarana, Vishaya. The scriptures teach that one can get rid of ignorance, which is the root cause of material existence, only by attaining a favorable position towards the Lord. So an intelligent person, being enlightened by the mercy of a qualified guru, should fully worship the Lord through the process of pure bhakti, devoid of other desires, devoid of karma. So basically you said that you just summarized this whole Adhikaranga Prakashika into one sentence. I'm telling you, it's good.
Money.
Yes.
Soon we see by the end, we see just three words or something.
Yes, three ways. Om Tat Sat. What does that mean? Oh, Om means this, go on for days. Tat means this. Sat means this. It's interesting that Om Tat Sat, but it starts, it's descending.
Descending?
Yeah. Om is Radha Krishna, the Jivas, the Dham, and the activities of devotional service.
Yeah.
Then Tat would be, that knowledge and that, and then Sat means eternity. So you're starting with Swayamrupa, and then you're going down to Paramatma and then to Brahma. Because we always like to put it the other way, because it's us to there, but here it's like, no, it starts here. That's why Om is the Mahavakya. You start off, because everything's coming from Krishna. So whether it's talking about Bhagavan, Brahman, or Paramatma, it's still coming from Krishna, so Om has to be there. So in the province of Om Tat Sat, then you can see there's more to it than just.
It's just Om Tat Sat.
Yeah. Yes. Samshaya and Purvapaksha. Right? So here's now our doubt. Scriptures also recommend other processes for realizing the absolute truth. There are many sections of the Vedas dedicated to the process of Karmakanda and Jnanakanda. Then why only worship the Lord is recommended? Right? So here's the doubt is scriptures also recommend other processes for realizing the absolute truth. So that is their pratigya. Does that make sense? And then their reason is, there are many sections of the Vedas And they give me different processes of karma, kanya, why you're saying it's only, you say it's only worship of the Lord. Right? Does that make sense? So then it goes into, now the uttara means now we're going to go into udhara.
So they challenge kind of the uniqueness of bhakti, I mean like the, not uniqueness, we say
it's all-encompassing or yes. Superiority.
Yes.
Yes, because this all-encompassing is something that many struggle with. Means here you see it's directly. No, you know, we worship demigods, that's this, or we do this, or Brahman, or like this, but we see even in the devotional process, people think, oh, unless we do this or that, you know, it's like the other you were saying, oh, unless we, you know, come in line with the modern culture and what they're thinking, then we won't be recognized or accepted in that, even though they're taking the smallest possible dynamic of the modern society and making that the total of 7 billion people. You know, they're taking a few million people's opinion and making that the most important. But they're thinking that it's not all-encompassing. Without this, we can't function. And we're functioning fine without that. It means the things that are discussed now are the same things that were there when Prabhupada landed in America in the 60s. In fact, they were on the streets marching about it. Now and again, now people go out and march, but not so much. You know what I'm saying? They've kind of switched over to, you know, pride or, you know. Yeah, like that. Yeah, so the thing is it's the same thing. So if it worked then, why wouldn't it work now? What's different about today that wasn't there before? You know, you say, oh, but it's changed. But, you know, it's just like in the Western thing, at least in America. And that I'm not sure about England and Europe, but in America you had the women's suffrage. It means that the women's right to vote.
Oh.
You know, that started in the 1800s. You know? That's where it becomes a movement. I'm sure it goes way back. I'm sure, you know, it means when Cleopatra was in charge, you didn't have to worry about it. But then after that, you know, and Caesar was cool. She was cool with him, and Augustus was all right. But then after that, then it kind of went downhill.
In USSR, nobody voted, so it was very equal.
Yeah. Everybody's got to go work in the factory.
No, the government would not elect it.
Yeah. You know, so the whole thing is that it's these things have always been there, but it's presented as this the latest thing we have to change. No, you don't. That's lack of faith. That's lack of commitment. You consider these things, but you have to be very, very careful about implementing, because if you use that, then what things that we're doing does the modern liberal atheistic philosophy like? Is there anything we do? We get up in the morning, we have this, we regulate the life, you have duties. You know, the four regular principles, you know, the absolute truth, you know, none of these things they like. So then we have to change all that, and then what do you have left?
No, but they like that Radha and Krishna too, and she's superior to the effects.
Yeah, that's fine. So therefore, it's just, you know, it's just, you know, why be equal when you can be superior? You know? Like that. And so that's the. Yeah, so what we're saying here is you give your point. You know, so here in Vishaya, then you're saying this is your thesis, like that. And you know, they're giving the, you know, whatever details are there. Then they're going to have their doubt based on that. So you're going to give your point, your reason. Then they're going to have a doubt. So then they express their doubt. Then Udaharana, that's where it deals with it. So when you're using this Vishaya, Shamshaya, Purvapaya, then you have Uttara. You use these terms. But these are just sub-terminologies within what Gotama presents. It just means, in other words, if no one has a doubt, I'm just presenting in that logical order. Right? But then you see, I ask a question. It's a doubt. So then we go back to the aspect of Udaharana and then clear the doubt. You know what I'm saying? Yes.
So there's a doubt, but then Purvak Paksha means counter arguments. Is that right?
Yes, means their Purvak Paksha means their reasoning.
Oh, reason.
Yeah, but it's also, it can be like that. But the point is there's these five things, how you want to put it together is another thing. Just like I say, okay, what's for lunch? And I mention five items. And they have a natural kind of form that's there. but at the same time as you might go back and forth. You know, if I say, oh, you've gone to the, you know, the, what do you call it, you know, as we were talking before, you know, you've gone to the dumpling, but then, you know, why you're mixing that with the shmitana? You know, like that, you know, the two separate things, and they can't go together, and then, okay, then you went on to, you know, the, you know, the, this other preparation, and then you went back to the dumpling and shmitana. So I don't understand, it's so confusing, and, you know, I mean, you know, it's like, is this a meal or not, or what, you know what I'm saying? So this is what happens, is that these are just showing the technical things on how you do it. Mm-hmm. That's all. In other words, if there's a doubt and there's a discussion, then these are the terms that are used mm-hmm. to show that there's an argument going on. Because otherwise, if I just say, you know, pratyaksha hetu udaharana, like that, I'm not mentioning that there's a doubt. I may be projecting that, you know, there may be some this, I'm trying to explain it from all angles. So in other words, the vichara, that's where the logic comes in, is in the udaharana. Right? Logic is used there. That's why we're going to see, that's where the use is that it comes up as in expressing things and trying to remove doubts and all that, and that's where the logic is used. And so I made my presentation present it like that. But at the same time, as we're having a discussion, then I have said it, they present their doubt. And that, and then they may give their reasons. So in other words, their reasons are like them expressing. Then having heard that, then I'll give my point, which would be a furtherance of Udaharana, but because it's my point, it's called Uttara. And then I'll say my Uttara. Then he'll have a you know the Purva Paksha to that, because you know. Does that make sense? So basically it just goes back and forth. Like that. So the Purva Paksha and the Uttara go together, Shamshaya and the Vishaya. You have your theory, they have theirs. You have your arguments, they have theirs. So does that make sense? So that's what's happening here. It's the process of going back and forth. And when you get to Siddhanta, then that meant that now you've concluded it. Does that make sense? Because as it is, what do you call it? House always wins.
Yes.
Yeah. No doubt.
So therefore, the Bhagavad always wins. Uttara. Shankhya, Astanga Yoga, and Karma are classed as being favorable because they produce realization of the form of Brahman. Because he's saying these other processes giving. Why do you say it's only bhakti? You know, it's just like we say, just do bhakti. No, but I have to maintain my family. Yes. So you take those things and engage in the Lord's service. You know, like that. It's part of the process that you're going to use. You're taking responsibility like that. No, but it's a separate thing. No, it's not. You can see it as separate, and they're called karmis. When you don't see it as separate, that's devotees. So then, a lot of times, it's just terminology, the perspective. And so they heard you say this about, you know, it's favorable and this and that, but then they say, well, what about practical? You know, and this and that. So therefore, then these come up. So he's saying that no, they are classified. They are part of the process. So yes, you have a job and take care of the family, and make money. That's part of the process because you're a grihasta. You know, and that grihasta is part of the process, and that you're engaging your nature and giving the results of that in Krishna service. Right? So the devotional service is the main thing. That you're conditioned and have some connection with the material world, then you. Situate yourself, so therefore grihasta. Grihasta then therefore has his duties, and his duties then he makes some money. Right? So that makes sense. And then for making money, then that's done like this. You know, you say, okay, he goes to work. Okay, so how does he go to work? He rides his car. Well, when he rides his car, goes to work in his car, how does he get there? He goes by this road, and then, you know, I mean, and what's the technique of his driving, you know? He, you know, sits in the front seat, and his mother-in-law sits in the back seat and tells him where to go. And, you know, all these different things like that. And so then he goes there. You know, how does he park? How does he drive in? You know, how much does he turn? What degree angle is he turning the thing each time? How much pressure is he putting on the pedal in that? How much gas is being burned each time and that? How much air is going into the thing? You know, how much the carburetor is moving, you know, you can get into such fine detail. But the point is all that simply because he's a devotee who is engaging his conditioning, you know, has situated as a grihasta, and therefore these things happen. Does Does that make sense? But otherwise you take it, no, this is whole, you know, science of how the car is working and all that. But yes, but that's only supportive of him driving to work, you know, because that's supportive, you know, of him taking care of the family, which is supportive of him engaging his nature in Krishna service. Does that make sense? It always unfolds like that. But we tend to take it, it's, you know, it's just like you say, you know Krishna, you know everything. Oh, but you know, how many grams that castle is, you know, the chessboard here. So then you say, but what does that got to do? But you know, you don't know that. This is, so when you say no, what are you talking about? Why it's just in your field? Unless you can see your field connect to the Lord and how the Lord is that weight, that there is weight, that there is gravity, that there is stone, that it has density, all that's coming from Krishna. So if you know Krishna, you know these. That detail is not important. If you need to know that, you manufacture these things, so therefore you want a particular weight, then you get into that. But if you're not, does anybody care? Right? I mean, any chess grandmaster, then it's about, you know, how many grams the chess piece is, and that's how his game is flourishes. You know, so therefore, when you have the game of chess, and each grandmaster brings his own set of pieces and puts them on the board, right? And everybody, you know, like that, they don't use the common thing, because his winning chess is all about that loan. My bishop weighs 37 grams. That's why I win. He says, well, that's because you use these tactics and that, but because I use these other tactics, my bishop weighs 39 grams. And that's why I beat you this time. Right? Then after that, he says, no, but I win because I have one of those, 2-kilo hammers, you know, and following in the footsteps of Maxwell, then I hit him over the head. You know, so the point is its connection to Krishna is the reality. The others, they have some meaning only if you're going to apply it in the situation. Right? If it's your area, you're mechanically applying, it has some meaning to you. If not, it doesn't have any meaning to you. It has zero meaning. So,
Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.